Okay, Alyssa, what would you like to discuss before you run off to whatever it is you're going to?
Yeah, well, I really want to get into Billy T, but I don't know if we'll have enough time.
Well, that's why I came on. Who's Billy Key? William Wilson, Brian Key? Oh, Billy
no.
Key. Oh, I got something for you. Okay, I got something right here for you.
Okay.
In the you have the new book, Transforming History 2009, right?
No, I have the 2001 copy. I haven't gotten the 2009 copy yet.
Okay, well, in it he says, for grade 9, the perspectival shift, the shift of perspective from medievalism to modernism, 1453 to 1688, and the archetypal ideas movement. And the theme in that chapter is the cultural transformation from medievalism to modernism, from world religions to a new world economy. Now listen to this. Under theory, the emergence of a new mathematical artistic mentality that produces a new narrative for the nature of things in which motion generates value. Now look at this inventory of motion 500 years ago. They discovered the motion of money through time produces interest. The motion of the blood in... Yes, the motion of the blood in circulation from the heart and not the liver sustains the life of the body. The motion of sailing vessels produces a new world space. The motion of the heavenly bodies produces scientific laws. The motion of cannonballs destroys feudal fortifications and produces new strategic power. And the motion of the individual out of his class produces a new identity of self in the formative picaresque story of a movement from rags to riches. Nice inventory of motion.
Yeah. That's nice. I have, so my friend's been reading Schopenhauer and has been telling me about how, you know, he's asserting that the very essence of existence is based on motion, like a perpetual movement forward. But that is contextualized only within this, you know, within this ideology or within this context of perception.
Yeah.
So yeah, it's really what my favorite thing about Billy is that he really helps bracket these forms of perception in a way. Like McLuhan's really great when you're starting to learn about perception in the first place, but William is helping kind of in the ecological historical way, kind of help root these places that you can look back to.
It gives you more content, more cultural content.
Yeah, 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 exactly. It's really, it's nice patterns. Like, it's, instead of just the pattern of media and society, it's like a nice broader pattern to kind of play with. So I've really been enjoying that. So motion, I want to look up my notes from where I'm at so far in the book.
Here's an example. In grade 8, the climax of hierarchical civilizations, 800 to 1453, the theme is life and society as a religious work of art. This is the ending of the universal religions. Theory, the inseparable unity of art, religion, and social structure in high medieval civilizations in which architecture becomes the supreme externalization of human existence into temporal form. From the cathedrals of Europe to the mosques of Isfahan, the Forbidden City of Beijing to the pre-Columbian ceremonial centers of the Americas, the medieval vision is one of consummate form in which the act of living itself, from drinking tea to riding to the hunt, becomes a work of art in itself.
Yeah.
That kind of inventory.
Yeah, and that makes me think of when I was starting to study Pullman, had time to really develop that as much as I want to yet, but that is a sort of ground to contrast, like, the architecture of all the castles and Palladio and what it... I mean, there's such a way of dealing with, you know, never minding an Iandam, losing your mind, gaining your mind, you know, all these actions, inaction, you know, motion, there's no more motion. And... you know, it does kind of come down to an enjoyment of life, which kind of makes me think of this, you know, life as the art form or whatever.
Enjoyment of thought.
Enjoyment of thought. Yeah. and
as well.
Yeah, so that moves it out of the body and into the mind, I guess. Enjoyment of thought.
Yeah,
enjoyment of.
Most people say they don't like to think, or they don't think. They don't have the enjoyment of thought. They don't know how to deal with it.
I wonder why.
Because they have some core thoughts that they're afraid of, which are their beliefs that they've been thinking a long time. And they think that if they think other weird thoughts, then they are the thought. And they start looking weird to other people.
There's such a connection, right, between identity and thought still.
Yeah. It's superstition.
And superstition of what you think is what makes you.
Yeah. Yeah.
Interesting.
Okay, here's another pattern. This is grade 10, Revolution and the Rise of the Individual, 1688 to 1851. So
wait. I have these in this book. Let me pull it up so I can
yes,
follow you.
You actually have more words than I'm doing. It's a shorter inventory in the later book. He leaves
off.
Did you
say grade 10?
Yes, and I have been walking to the beach the last week memorizing these.
Right, yeah.
And as I'm reading this later book, I see there's a couple of paragraphs cut off in each section. For example, you could look at grade 9, which I just read, the motions ones, and read after produces a new identity of self in the formative picaresque story of a movement from rags to riches. I think it says the epiphanies of movement.
Is this in the homeschooling outline? Sorry, is this in the homeschooling outline?
Past page 96. Past page 96. Maybe 120. Get up to grade 9.
Yeah, okay. I'm looking at the 9th grade right now, and the theme is shift from medievalism to modernism. Okay, I'm with you.
Now go down through the motions, and you'll see produces a new identity of self in the formative picaresque story of a movement from rags to riches.
See that line? All of these epiphanies of movement constitute the cultural shift from okay.
Yeah, no, read that. Read that sentence properly, clearly.
All of these epiphanies of movement constitute the cultural shift from medievalism to modernism in the emergence of a new world economy.
Yeah, so that's the beginning of the global village, 1500 to 1600, say. Now, under practice, see what they don't include. This later book says, an integrated studies approach. So the practice of how the teacher would go over this through this year, talking about this period, it would be an integrated studies approach in which the scholarly narratives concerned with the Renaissance, the voyages of discovery, and the rise of European science are brought together in an understanding that these separate descriptions are all partial perceptions of a single cultural transformation. Is there anything more after that? I don't think so.
Breaks down the project after that.
Yes, the project. What would that be? That would be the art and science of perspective and the close examination of nature. Right? And then the tie-in with science is the transformation of sight and space. And then the other part of the science is the core disciplines, astronomy, physics, and physiology. Correct?
Mm-hmm.
Yeah, see,
there's
I got that
a
memorized.
Lot here.
It's not, yeah, it's not in this book. He cuts that off.
Okay. Oh, okay. Yeah, there's a lot here, so it says... it has number one, and then it says the 15th century projection into Africa by Ming, China's Zingo, and Portugal's Henry the Navigator expresses the beginnings of the transition to a new culture of global exchange and rearticulation of the world space.
Yes.
And
okay, let's go to grade 10.
Okay.
It's in your book, it says the 10th grade.
Mm-hmm.
Okay.
Yeah, I'm getting there. Yep, here I am.
Okay, so you're going to add to what I don't have. So it says the archetypal idea is time. The theme is revolution and the rise of the individual. the Enlightenment and the Romantic Reaction and the Emergence of the Philosopher, Scientist, Inventor, and Artist as Avatars of Civilization. He doesn't say those words in your book. Then under Theory, he says the expansion of European civilization into the New World brings with it a new expansion and empowerment of the middle class. With the democratization of information through printing, the priest and the knight no longer hold between them the structure of civilization. The minister with his congregation, and yours it says, the dissenting minister with his congregation.
Yeah.
The scientist and inventor with their learned societies, he says that in yours. The revolutionary with his pamphlets and printing press, he says that in yours. And the artist as a charismatic genius with his own following, he has that in yours, all create a new cultural myth of individuality that transforms the millennial old formations of domination and governance. That's in yours, too. Let me see, is there a sentence after that? No, that's that. And then it goes into practice.
My book has something in the theory that you didn't read. It says, the scientist, the inventor, and the artist become, or is that in the above
no,
paragraph?
No, listen, perhaps? I'll tell you what it is. It's not in this one. The scientist, the inventor, and the artist become the new charismatic embodiments of a time of change. Correct?
Mm-hmm. Yes.
See? I know it. I memorized it.
You're memorizing this?
Yeah, I memorized all this stuff. Yeah, the past week.
Great.
I do it while walking to the beach and coming home. Matter of fact, when I'm swimming, it's going through my mind, and mm-hmm. if I get bogged down, when I finish a lap, I walk out of the water, walk over to my shoes, pull out the paper,
right.
Okay, I missed that line, and put it back in, and then I go back in the water.
Yeah, that's a good idea. Yeah, yeah.
The practice is good. The practice, look what it says. The study of the interrelationships between the English Revolution, that's Cromwell, 1650, the Enlightenment, the Industrial Revolution, the American and French Revolutions, and the European Revolutions of 1848 in creating a new global political culture.
Yeah, there's a lot of revolution happening.
So what were you going to say?
Since I came on the scene here, I really have changed what I view of what it means to have been an artist. So it's interesting, the sentence of the scientist, the inventor, and the artist become new charismatic embodiments of a time of change.
Yeah.
And you know, we talk here about being quadriphenic, being, you don't have to be an artist anymore, you can be everything. So I'm thinking about how, you know, what we would add to this sentence now, the scientist, the inventor, the artist become new charismatic embodiments of a time of change, because that's what's happening here, but it's not focused to just the scientist, the inventor, and the artist.
Right. This is 300 years ago. In the grade 11, which gets closer to our time, he says, the title is Global Economic Consolidation, so that's the super states locking down some kind of huge empire, and then they overlap with the other historical oligarchies. Global economic consolidation and visionary revolts. So the archetypal idea is speed and transformation. In the ninth grade, the archetypal idea is space, the expansion and articulation into the new world space in the voyages of discovery. In the 10th grade, the archetypal idea is time, the story of the individual's rise from rags to riches, from old world to new, from oppression to revolutionary liberation. Now, if you look closely at the 10th grade, the rise of the individual from rags to riches is not in the 10th grade, it's in the 9th grade, that inventory of motion. So he blurs it and puts it into the 10th grade here. In the 11th, and you notice that when you're memorizing it, because you're knowing things, you say, wait a minute, that doesn't fit there. If you're just casually reading it, you won't notice that. You won't remember.
But in order to have motion, there has to be space and time. So there's the blur, right?
Yes, but he means space as movement and time as evolution. You get Darwin, and you get, he says, geology and chemistry. So look what he says next. In the 11th grade, the archetypal idea is speed. In your book, he says the archetypal ideas are speed and transformation, right?
Right.
It's a little more words. Then he says, the wedding of time to space in the acceleration of culture in modernization through the instrumentalities of the new cultural vehicles of the world city and the world war. Interesting. The world war as a cultural vehicle. That's said in McLuhan, where he says war is education. Okay, so we have two new phenomena coming in 150 years ago.
And this is an update of the revolutions that we were just discussing in grade 10.
Yes, that's the previous phase. That's the previous phase. That's 1688 to 1850. This is 1851 to 2001.
Yeah,
the cultural vehicles of the world city and the world war. So in this book, he has a chart later of Paris in the end of the 19th century, then New York in the middle of the 20th century.
Oh, I think I saw that in here.
And I posted it. It's in your. Yeah. I think it's in your book. It's not in this one. No, I don't think it's in
Paris,
this one.
Yeah, Paris, New York, and L.A. Yeah, I've got it right here.
Yeah, which is the sequence I have in my chart. I have Paris, New York, Atlantis, Lemuria. And Atlantis is Tokyo, and Lemuria is L.A. So he leaves out the Tokyo phase, but he gets into the Android meme phase that he calls Los Angeles. So in this inventory about the grade 11, he says, it's a bit different words than what you have. He says, in both of the world city and the world war, in both of these large-scale organizations of culture, the new transportational modes, he has here the new transportation modes, you have transportational vehicles. He has the new transportation modes of railroad, automobile, truck, tank, airplane, jet, and rocket have enormous impact on traditional cultures and religious worldviews, and these react to modernization in visionary movements of mythopoeic prophecy and fundamentalist re-sacralization. The conflict between the mechanists and the mystics in the articulation of values for a new world civilization. Then he has a theme. In this book, he has threads for interweaving grades 9, 10, and 11. Do you see that?
Wait. Before we move on, the conflict between the mechanists and the mystics, articulation of values of a new earth, I mean, that still seems like it's happening.
Well, he says that. He doesn't say it in mine, but he says in yours, he goes, the conflict, blah, 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 which continues to this day.
Oh, yeah, I didn't even read that.
Yeah.
Yeah, I see that now, yeah.
Now, here's the thing. The conflict between the mechanists and the mystics, Ion doesn't have that duality. Ion works both with machines and with the mystical tradition and something else. So this is where
Only in
Thompson,
social mortar is that conflict still happening.
No, there's no conflict between. It is in social mortar, but Ion doesn't have a conflict.
Yeah, I'm with you.
Ion says your chemical body will be virtualized, the chip body will merge with the chemical body. These traditional divisions that Thompson has, Ion doesn't have,
and
because of what we're at now. So then, does it say after that, threads for interweaving grades 9, 10, and 11? You see that next page or so? Or is that only in this book?
Interweaving, let's see. He breaks it down by months, so there's a lot for me to pay through.
Oh, yeah, he does that. Yeah, he does that in this one later. But so let me just read this little new part he puts in.
Okay,
number one, war as an oxymoronic organization. Following up on the 10th grade study of war as a construction of destruction that paradoxically does not destroy its own structure but does generate transcultural exchanges, following up on that, we can reflect on the Anglo-Dutch conflicts of the 17th century. In this era, conflict, competition, and transnational investment brought about a shift of the economic capital of Europe from Amsterdam to London. That's 1688. And Dutch capital provided much of the investments that enabled Britain to construct the roads and canals that facilitated its industrial revolution. In much the same way, in the 20th century, the American and Japanese competition and conflict in the Pacific interlocked the two nation states and brought about the emergence of a new post-war global economy in which the bulk of American trade shifted from Europe to the Pacific Rim. And he talks about the automobile factories moved to Japan, the American automobile mm-hmm. factories, and the Japanese Buddhism moved to California. So he's saying mm-hmm. countries that get into war usually end up flipping into each other.
Mm. Interesting.
He calls that a transcultural exchange.
Huh.
So
and
then
I was thinking the oxymoronic part is that war becomes part of like a need of capitalism, you know, like the military, you know, is driving so much of the economy within a certain timeline of at least American, well, all of the world.
Well, do you know what oxymoron means? Oxymoronic?
Isn't it just like an odd reversal, like it's no longer doing this, it's doing both?
Yes, you could just say it that way. Like, take the word defense intelligence agency.
Yeah.
That's an oxymoron because they're not really defending and they're not really intelligent and they're contradicting each other.
Yeah.
So he says, the role of the world city in the development of civilization. In the 10th grade, we looked at London as a world city that celebrated a new consciousness of itself in the Crystal Palace and the Great Exhibition of 1851. When Walter Benjamin described Paris as, quote, the capital city of the 19th century, unquote, he was, as a cultural critic, thinking more of architecture, art, literature, and science more than economics and industry. Economics and industry would be in London. This shift in the definition of civilization from industrial infrastructure to ideological superstructure is empowered by the new world city, an ecology of consciousness in which people do not simply share an ideology, but participate in a culture in which architecture, painting, photography, poetry, technologies of transport and communication, novels and works of science all interact in a process of emergence. This civilization mm-hmm. of the 19th and 20th centuries is decidedly novel and not simply a growth in size of the, quote, civilization, unquote, of the 17th century.
Hmm. Yeah, a switch from, what was that phrase, a switch from something to the ideologies emerging? What was the contrast there?
It says, an ecology of consciousness in which people do not simply share an ideology, like a national ideology, but participate in a culture in which architecture, painting, photography, poetry, technologies of transport and communication, novels and works of science all interact in a process of emergence. There's a lot mm-hmm. more going on in the electric phase in the last 150 years than just some national linguistic limited culture.
And that would be the change of currency and the disappearance of money. That would be the beginning of that, you know, where the cultural emergence of everything is more valuable to people in a way.
Yes. Yeah. The information media makes visual printed money weak.
Mm-hmm.
That as you move into the New York phase on that chart, he says, I think it's some guy, Ferdinand Brodel, a cultural historian, he says that...
Sorry, hold
New
on,
York,
there's a dog. Let me move. I'll go... I don't want to have any interruptions here. Okay.
So he says... he quotes Brodel, who says that... Yes, New York got nailed in 1929 and had the Depression, but it was the first to go through the Depression, figure out how to get out of it, and that made New York the new world city capital. It moved to New York. So they got hit first, they survived it first, so therefore they were better able to handle the post-World War II world. So it became the American century.
That would be bringing in transformation. The transformative element of that needing to happen, which is the 11th grade archetypal idea of speed and transformation.
Speed and transformation, right.
Mm-hmm. The transformation thing is really interesting. Oh, keep going. We can go back to that.
Yeah, so then he gives suggested projects for integrated studies. He wants the students to notice that common things are happening all over the planet. What's the common... factor in all the different, supposedly different nations. So he says, following up on my suggestion that we consider Descartes' Discourse on Method as a picaresque narrative in which the soldier of fortune momentarily escapes the horrors of war and reflects on the role of human error in the search for truth. Following up on that, I suggest that for our thread on war, we consider the expressions of World War I in the war lyrics of Wilfred Owen and Siegfried Sassoon, or Virginia Woolf's study of shell shock and polite society in her novel Mrs. Dalloway. Then he says, two, one of our threads stitching together grades 9, 10, 11 can be economies of addiction. That's in quotes, economies of addiction. Since drug use is a life and death choice that confronts teenagers, and a historical study of this problem should get them where they live. Our year begins with the Opium Wars, in which England sought to balance its craving for tea by selling opium to the Chinese. This to avoid the enormous balance of payments problem caused by the Chinese refusal to buy mass-produced English factory goods and their insistence on payment in gold. The Opium War provides us with an occasion to reflect back on the relationship between sugar and slavery in the plantations of the 17th and 18th century economies, and forward to the manner in which our contemporary American economy is structured on tobacco use and conflict with Latin America concerning the growth of coca and cannabis. Recent debates about the medicinal use of cannabis and the horrendous social costs of considering alcohol and tobacco as socially acceptable provide an occasion to reflect on the social construction of an interdicted substance. Interdicted. Then he says, point three, to build upon the 10th grade studies of opera and Mozart's Magic Flute, we can study the architectural statement of the Paris Opera and perhaps Puccini's Tosca as a meditation on love and death, reaction and revolution. Point four, as a tie-in with literature, I suggest we offer a reading of Joseph Conrad's Heart of Darkness as a study of imperialism and the shadow side of this civilizational process that is our major focus for the year. For an urban study of Haussmann, Baron Haussmann's Paris, we can look at poems about the city such as Baudelaire's Le Cygne or Paul Verlaine's La Bonne Chanson, in which he speaks of, quote, Le Brut des Cabarets, La Fang des Trattoirs, or Rambo's L'Orgie Parisienne ou Paris Repouple.
I think Roxy would laugh at you right now.
Yeah, she gets a big kick out of me attempting Spanish. Yes. Yeah, just as I get to laugh, when she says pagan, she goes pagan.
Right.
Another possible project is to study the nature of perception in both painting and photography. That's Monet and Atget, A-T-G-E-T, a famous photographer back then, and what each has to say about the social consciousness of urbanization in the Paris of the second half of the 19th century. A project in which mathematics, engineering, and architectural history can be brought to throw light on modern architecture could involve the examination of the structure and values of a particular building. I suggest a comparative approach that analyzes the Crystal Palace of London, the Paris Opera, the Eiffel Tower, and the railroad station Gare Saint-Lazare as the new technological cathedrals. Then he says, one of the threads for the entire year of the 11th grade is the nativistic or millenarian movement. It might prove interesting to students to contrast contemporary modes of channeling and millennial prophecy with those involved in the Taiping Rebellion, that'd be in the 19th century, or the Ghost Dance, another thing that happened in the 19th century. Since one of the focuses I will be proposing for grade 12 is the study of psychology, the study of these millenarian and mystical movements could give us a chance to introduce psychological ideas in the character analysis of a prophetic leader, like Hung Sui Xuan, or somebody or something called the Mahdi, M-A-H-D-I, or Louis Riel in Canada. And then he says, the transformation of the understanding of time with its new reading of fossils and geological landscapes leads to new theories of development that culminate in Darwinian evolution and the birth of the new science of genetics with Gregor Mendel and William Bateson. This wedding of an expanded conception of space to an expanded sense of time leads to an experience of acceleration, of space wed to time, in a process of modernization that transforms industrial civilization and creates a break between modernizing and traditional societies. New institutions like they call Polytechnique of Paris, MIT, and in New England are created to become the driving engines for the emergence of the modern industrial nation-state. Evolution, as the narrative of time, becomes conscious of itself, and its first articulation is an imperialism that sees savagery at one end of the continuum in the Belgian Congo and European science and civilization at the other. So, and now I want to glean something here. Yeah, go ahead.
Yeah, go ahead. Well,
go.
I was having to close my eyes and listen, and then I was also trying to follow along, but it was too scattered within this. I'm gonna get the new book because, you know, that's 8 years later. There's a lot. Speaking of acceleration, there's a lot that had changed from 2001 to 2009.
No, he doesn't. There is not. It's much the same content. He just shortens the second one.
But he doesn't even. Yeah. Okay.
He shortens it and sort of says it differently to make it briefer.
Okay. Yeah.
So no, he's still dealing with the same 1851 to 2001. He doesn't add anything that happens between 2001 and 2009.
Okay.
So, let's see. In what's interesting is what he says in creation, in the first grades, and it starts off in kindergarten. So, kindergarten is just dealing with the creation of the vast elemental forces of light and dark, visible, invisible, high and low. So, if you imagine before... mortar, social mortar. Humans or early humans or hominids or semi-apes are in a state of play and interaction. So then he had, that's kindergarten. Then grade one, he calls it patterns. The human starts to notice patterns in snowflakes, in flowers, in rhyming words, in rhythm and dance. And then patterns is in grade one, the third phase. It's just patterns itself. And he says the evolution from creation to creatures to the self instrumentally active in its world. So in kindergarten, he doesn't have a summary statement there, just a whole bunch of paragraphs, so I can't sum that up. But
Wait, hold on.
You have one. You can
patterns.
Read yours. Yeah, you can
grade
read the creation.
Grade one is patterns. Grade two.
Yeah, no, read kindergarten.
Read kindergarten?
Read kindergarten.
Okay.
What's the theory?
The theme, the theory of kindergarten is the re-enchantment of animism, reverence for the sacred, and the suchness of things.
Right. And what's the theme?
The theme is the creation, the vast elemental forces of light and dark, high, low, visible, and invisible.
All right. So then you go to grade one. It moves into patterns. And he says the evolution. Yeah, he says the evolution from the animism of presence to persons, personified objects, and musical instruments. The practice is the exploration of patterns in snowflakes and flowers, rhyming words and songs, patterns in rhythm and dance. So then you go to grade two, and he used the word systems.
Mm-hmm.
And he says the evolution from creations to, that's one, kindergarten, to creatures, that's grade one, phase two, to the self instrumentally active in its world. Then he says the increased use of computers and high-tech externalizations of imagination in taking patterns up to the level of patterns and systems.
Yeah.
He jumps forward to what the kids can, now they can start maybe reading and working with computers. He doesn't want them to be doing it in kindergarten and grade one. It's basically play in those first 2 years. Then it says the development of group. Yeah, go ahead.
Well, I just want to keep reiterating that the beautiful part of this, the fractal of this ecology that he, you know, shows, is one thing leading to another, leading to another, leading to another. And that is, you know, that's kind of like creating the poise that we talk about around here, where you can kind of see through all the perceptions into the pattern, and it just, it, what does it cause when you start seeing these patterns and you start noticing even the fractal aspects of the pattern, something growing from another, like he says, the increased use of computers and high-tech externalizations of imagination and taking patterns up to the level of patterns of patterns in systems.
In systems.
Within a system. I mean, how would you describe what that does to somebody?
Makes them more thoughtful or less impulsive, which can become a problem. You're too involved in the thought, then you lose your spontaneity. But you don't want to just live in instinct and passion because you'll just be bumping into things too much, scraping your legs and knees. So to engage in the evolution of thought is a way of creating detachment.
So the evolution of thought is something that is even needed to see these patterns. And
yes.
does he place an evolution of thought within this grade system?
Yes, basically the patterns that you're reading are the evolution of thought.
Mm-hmm.
See, so in grade two, which is the third phase, he says the development of group movement and dance into sports and athletic competition, in which the performance of self-accomplishment naturally expands at the same time it is channeled into a sense of the group and the team. So that's a thought, what I just read. It's a pattern.
Yeah. Yeah, so this can be all under the umbrella of thought.
Yes.
As well as, okay. I mean, that sounds obvious, but it's kind of the subtle thing when you're talking about the enjoyment of thought and how, you know, thought and identity are so closely related for people, and how to kind of move beyond that, to enjoy the thought, to play with thought, and to see identity within it, but to see it in a pattern that takes you out of it, where you're not getting tripped up by thinking you are your thought.
That's right. So in grade three, so you've had creation, patterns or creatures, and then systems. Then in grade three, now he develops each phase. There's three of each phase, and there's four threes leading up to the grade 11. And he says in each phase, there's the formative, then the dominant, and then the climactic. So we've seen the formative in kindergarten, the dominant in grade one, and then the climactic in grade two. Then it's going to happen again with grade three.
Mm.
Now he says it's human systems. It's like pre-human in grade two, where it's just called systems. Human systems, the development of human society from the hunting and gathering band to the Ice Age settlement, such as Dolny Vestanici. Then it says theory, the evolution of the Jean Gebser's categories, magical, the evolution of the Gebserian magical to the... No, it's from archaic. In your book, it would say from the evolution of the archaic, that would be the ape level, to the magical. So he calls it the Gebserian magical structure of consciousness and its evolution, the beginnings of awareness that the self situated in a world is actually situated in a cultural world in which the instruments and technology that have proved so fascinating in empowering a sense of self are in turn situated in a history. In other words, the child now begins to be aware of time itself as part of the process of one's empowerment and unfoldment in the world. A strong sense of justice and fair play shows the child's articulation of self and other in a growing sense of a moral order. The spirit of the will becomes ensouled with intense feeling in a rage for justice and fair play. And then under practice it says, the exploration of the origins of art, symbolic science, and religion as they develop together in the rise of human settlements in the Ice Age. So in this second phase of three grades, I'm going to call this Rai. And it goes from harmonization happens in the first three, kindergarten, grade one and two. Now you move into symbolization. And so it involves art, symbolic science, and religion. So that's the beginning what's in the Emerald Tablets, where Thoth is describing the enlightened person, the ascended person, in relation to the little man, and there has to be certain social control set up so that Thoth doesn't get killed. So he's a magician. He can hypnotize little man in different ways, just even with ideas. So the beginning of setting up of hierarchical societies, beginning with matriarchy first and then the patriarchy, getting into 4500 B.C., that is what I'll call Rai, and the beginning of social order, and the magician is the one who can play with the cultural folklore and hypnotize others with it. So
would you say that the magician is outside of social order at that point?
Yes, he knows how to, he or she knows how to mold the sensory biases of his culture and keep above it in charisma, so to speak, have a kind of charisma like he's makes the others feel less than. So cosmic awareness defined Rai as an ancient magician. So you're seeing here in grade 3 the development of a human society and a bit of a hierarchy is the beginning of separateness and that trend of authority and domination, less nomadic sharing in all the tasks and wealth that they come across, mainly food. So you have grade 3 is the beginning of Neolithic agricultural settlements. They get stuck. They're not moving around. They're not nomadic. And so then you can build a hierarchy on that. And then he has in grade 4, which is the second part of this three phases.
This grade would be climactic? Social...
No, that's grade 5 will be climactic.
Okay.
So he has grade 3 is the development of matriarchy moving into later patriarchy. Grade 4 is social systems from 10,000 B.C. to 3,500 B.C., and he says that's the evolution from the magical to the mythical in Gebser's categories, in the rise of agriculture and the growth of agricultural towns such as Cadelhoic and megalithic structures in Western Europe, that'd be like Stonehenge. And the practice of that period is the study of ecology, botany, simple chemistry, archaeoastronomy, sculpture, and the development of shamanism into religion. Then you get grade 5, now you have the ancient civilizations, what he calls the riverine civilizations. The shift from matriarchal societies to patriarchal civilizations, that's 3500 to 1450. The evolution from shamanism to religion, from matriarchal sacrifice to patriarchal warrior culture, from the immanental, that's like pervasive, from the immanental and generative arithmetic mentality to the transcendental and abstract geometrical mentality. That's when the patriarchy comes in. And the practice is a study of archaeoastronomy, geometry, irrigation systems, architecture, the simple physics of civil engineering, and the origins of literature, mythology, and folklore. So you had these three phases. They start to get settled, little settlements, start growing things. Then the growing gets huge, and they start warehousing, so people start raiding each other, so the men take over the military part. And then that gets consolidated in grade 5 with the rise of the riverine civilizations. That would be Sumeria, Egypt, other places like that, maybe China, Chinese in the Yangtze, whatever they call that part of China. So then you're now going to have another sequence of three, and this is grade 6, grade 7, and grade...
And then what was the middle word you
dominant.
Used before?
Dominant.
Okay.
And then climatic. So it starts sneaking in as a new form. It's going to kick out the older form, and then when it successfully obsolesces the old form, it becomes dominant, and then it has its peak and climaxes and ends. And then a new mentality, geometrical, mathematical mentality, surfaces. So what McLuhan calls a new medium, he calls a mathematical literary mentality.
Mm-hmm.
So in grade six, the formative of the next three phases, he brings up the role of the individual. The individual starts to confront the excessive military raping, pillaging, and plundering going on all over the place. Starts suggesting there's a universal moral code or moral order. So the role of the individual in this phase is in the confrontation of evil and suffering and advocating the idealistic transformation of society. So that's where you get all the Jewish prophets and eventually get Jesus. And the practice in that period is the study of philosophy, sacred language, and sacred geometry. The masculinist idea of higher mathematics as a vehicle of the soul's transcendence is contrasted to the Eleusinian mysteries of the immanental or pervasive earth goddess and her daughter. So you have the emphasis of the individual in the formative, the individual prophet. Then the individual prophet gets swamped. The environment becomes bigger than him or her, and you go to grade eight. We're on grade seven.
Yeah.
Now you have 350 BC to 800 AD. You have universal religions and universalizing empires. The empires are trying to spread out, in McLuhan terms, over visual space, and they're getting beat up occasionally, so they retreat. So the universalizing is a process. But the religions are not a verb, they're a noun, universal religion. You get with it, you get converted, and then you salute the particular religion your area has.
So is this, we could see this, oh yeah, he says in the theory, we could see this from the shift of individual to universal. I was going to ask you about this phrase, you have harmonization, then symbolism, and then are you saying individualization for 6, 7, 8?
No, or that's civilization.
Civilization.
His term is civilization, mm-hmm. which is the world of writing and the eyeball. So you had the first very primitive phase is culture. Then the middle phase, the part two would be grade one, is society. And then he moves into civilization, industrialization, and planetization. So there's
right.
two phases.
But with your, you on your notes, you wrote harmonization and symbolization. I was wondering if you had a different categorization of the formative, dominant, and climatic spiral that's happening with each three grade.
I have more of the tetrad than the sequential formative, dominant, climactic.
Uh-huh.
I have obsolescence, retrieval, expansion, reversal, flip.
So you're seeing but that here. Are you? I'm wondering how you would apply that to this cluster.
I don't. I absorb this.
Mm-hmm.
If you notice, I have Thompson in some of the categories up top there on the chart.
Mm-hmm.
Some of his categories are. So he's part of the content of the chart. Croker's
yeah.
part of it. McLuhan and LaRouche, they're all, their jargon is mixed in with certain parts of the chart.
Yeah.
But let's not get distracted. I want to make this point about grade seven.
Right. Go ahead.
The shift from, so you had these individual prophetic guys. The shift from individual prophetic visions to universal religions and world empires, and these empires are intellectually supported by philosophical visions of a transcultural moral order. Then he says the practice of that era, 350 BC to 800 AD, is a study of empires around the world and the manner in which the institution of the imperial school of philosophy and religion serves to both sanctify and sublimate military violence into a civilized moral order. An examination of the ways of conquest in Hellenistic, Indian, Chinese, Roman, Byzantine, Mesoamerican, Islamic, and Carolingian empires, and the schools of philosophy, art, mathematics, and sciences associated with each of those eight cultures. So a very violent time, and they're trying to come up with some moral code that applies to everybody. Transcultural, what's he call it?
Transcultural moral order.
Right, where is that?
In the theory.
Oh, yeah, the bottom there, transcultural moral order. Okay. So that's grade 7. That is the dominant phase. Then you go into grade 8, and this is the climax of hierarchical civilizations. You can say the beginning of the climax of visual space, and that's what we did. The cathedrals of Europe to the mosques of Isfahan, the forbidden city of Beijing to the pre-Columbian ceremonial centers of the Americas, and the medieval vision is one of consummate form in which the act of living itself, from drinking tea to riding to the hunt, becomes a work of art in itself. Then the practice is, through an emphasis on art and architecture, we will look at medieval civilizations all around the world. In your book, it says hierarchical civilizations, not
right,
medieval.
I was just going to bring that up, yeah.
Yeah. So then, what I notice about these phases, it tends to have individual freedom or their facsimile thereof in the first formative phase, like
right.
Kindergarten, playing with the creation forces. And then grade, the second phase, dominance, starts to diminish the individual. He starts getting swallowed up in the level of technology that's happening. And then there's a climactic phase of the whole process of the...
That pushes into the next phase.
That pushes into the next. And so then, so that means grade 3 must have a certain kind of individualizing trend. And that would be, it's called social systems, that would be the shamanism of the matriarchal societies, where the man is the victim. So, in a sense, women have a bit of freedom in this early phase of the second cycle. Okay? And so there's a bit of control. They control their gardens, they control the agriculture. But they're going to lose control in the 1450 to 350 phase when there's just endless military invasions going on. So it becomes bigger than the individual freedom of the first phase. And then in grade 7, actually I got that. Let's see, that's the individual is in creation, kindergarten, 1 and 2. 1 is the beginning of systems taking over, it's called systems, and then that's 1, and then grade, sorry, patterns is in grade 1.
Patterns.
And then systems, overwhelming systems in grade 2. Then it redoes it. You have grade 3, the development of the hunting-gathering band settles into agriculture, and the women are sort of in charge of that. Then grade 4 is the storing of the agricultural products become a little unwieldy. So there's a bit of stress, so the individual or cooler phase, nicer phase, is swamped. And then that is totally wiped out in grade 5 with the rise of the riverine civilizations, where it moves from a matriarchal sacrifice culture to a patriarchal warrior culture. And that gets confronted in grade 6, the next phase of 3,
yeah,
with the individual
right.
prophets. Now, the individual prophets in phase 2, the dominant phase, they go down because the Roman civilizations are happening. These huge universalizing empires are swallowing up individuals more than the previous phase. So then the climax has to be grade 8, where you have life and society as a religious work of art. So now inside this visual space that's been increasing, the human becomes a robot. So you merge with your robotic role and turn the act of living into an art itself, from drinking tea to riding to the hunt. You've actually become quite quite mechanical, you would say. You're aesthetically able to make beauty out of it, but you've given up trying to be a free individual or have your own rhythms, and you merge with the environment around you, the visual, the abstract space of architecture becoming the supreme externalization of human existence into temporal form. So that's the end of that phase. And then you got one more phase of 3, that's 9, 10, and 11. So in 9, you have the beginning of movement, the spreading out of the European and Mediterranean sort of prison into this whole new Atlantic Ocean thing in North America. And notice it says the motion of the sailing vessels produces a new world space, but in a sense it says it produces North America, which Ion says comes from a parallel world. So it was evoked by the sailing vessels.
Columbia.
Okay, so you got... What?
It said Columbia.
Yeah. So then, so grade 9 has this shift from medievalism to modernism. It's no longer the hierarchical civilizations, though they linger. But you're moving into kinetic space, movement, extension of the muscles. So a new kind of identity surfaces. So that's like the first phase of the previous cycles. It's a movement. It's a liberation. Okay. So then.
And that goes into your, you know, I don't know if it was you or somebody else, but talking about how America is based on a kinetic.
Yes.
What would you say?
Bias.
A kinetic bias. Yeah.
Bias. Yeah. They when they express mastery of something, they say, "I know it like I think the inside of my pocket." There's two of them. There's the German and the American, and I get mixed up. I know it like the inside of my pocket, or I know it inside out. One of them is
inside
the American one. Yeah, probably inside out.
I've never
out.
Heard the pocket one, yeah.
Okay,
inside
I know it
out.
Inside
yeah.
out. Yeah. That's, McLuhan says, the kinetic manipulative bias, industrial manipulation. So America takes off on hardware, the phrase I know it inside out is called plenary awareness. That means complete mastery. When you have total plenary awareness, you have a sense of the mastery of it, and so you express it like I know it inside out. That's a statement of the plenary awareness,
which is also like an individualization, like a similar pattern where you feel like you as an individual could master something. And that's in the formative phase of the kinetic, whereas then it's going to probably take over coming up here pretty soon.
That's right.
Swallowed.
So the kinetic starts off in 9, but electricity is sneaking up. So you will see in grade 10, he talks about, if you look down the bottom, the tie-in with the integrative studies project, he says, art and electricity. The case of Frankenstein.
Right.
And then he has the romantic artist as shaman and prophet, the case of Beethoven. He's an example of that. The artist, the genius as prophet and shaman.
How do you think he's considering Beethoven as a prophet of what, the electric age?
No, of he is all for the New World in America, and he was very enthusiastic about Napoleon, but Napoleon became an emperor, so he dropped Napoleon. But it's this huge genius that's making these very advanced, complex musical structures for orchestra that not too many people had that ability. So he's the charismatic embodiment of genius. What's that phrase? The charismatic, the artist as a charismatic genius with his own following. And earlier it says in your page, you'll see the artist, the scientist, the inventor, and the artist are the charismatic embodiments of a time of change.
Right, yeah, that was
grade 10.
That was 11th grade, or 10, okay.
No, 10th. So you've got the locking down of the rise of the individual and all kinds of revolutions going on.
Yeah.
And then you come to the climactic phase where it's global consolidation. And in that sense, the individual is totally kaput. You know, he's inside the Android meme. And then you have the only reaction is the former nativistic countercultural scene. Nativistic, visionary movement based on older cultures, worldview, and
nostalgia and a repeat.
Yeah, yeah, a nostalgia for some mythical past. So, 9, 10, 11 have this internal sub phases of formative, dominant, and climactic. And you got 4 of those 3-part phases. So after grade 11, you go into Iandom. Or you could say you have the Android meme, and it replays all these grades and phases all at once.
Mm-hmm.
So everybody's gray at 3 and has the emotional maturity of a 4-year-old. All this effect of the mishmash. And then,
all of these get swallowed.
Yes, by the virtual Android meme. So this book comes out during the Android meme after image phase. So McLuhan, Thompson, Croker, LaRouche, Dobbs, and Mae Brussel and Zapp are extensions of the Android meme. They're symbolic representations of media environments, which themselves, those media environments, shrink and become really tiny in the smartphone.
I've always wanted to ask you, like, you talk about the Android meme, but then you also have talked about it disappearing. Can you riff on that a bit? Because that's, I mean, obviously there's going to be a both and, but that's confusing to me at this point, because we're talking about the Android meme replaying, which what I'm seeing now is just the way of, so symbolization in grade 3 is the beginning of social mortar. And so after grade 11, the Android meme becomes the social mortar, and it's playing out all these grades. But in the way that it's disappeared, how would you speak to that?
Well, the digital phase of the Android meme, everybody knows things get miniaturized. More and more is done with smaller and smaller. So the miniaturization is the shrinking of the Android meme, where it appears to the human to be removing itself, getting out of your way, making technology simpler for you to use. And a lot more can be done with the speed up and the miniaturization. So the Android meme is disappearing itself aesthetically, but it's a strategy of seduction.
It's
a strategy of seduction. And if we didn't have ion or whatever breakthroughs coming with cold fusion and that, it would just go into a horrible slave society, which people are already experiencing right now, a global slave society.
Yeah.
And there'd be no relief from it. So I started going around saying, middle 90s and late 90s, that this was the positive part of my message. To the degree you look like you were being positive, I said, you know, if you actually interact with me, I could depress the hell out of you by pointing out what you've been swallowed by. But overall, I'm saying that we are going to and are overcoming the Android meme. And first, that included the fact that the Android meme was faking allowing you to take over. So I had that negative.
When would that have been?
That's in the 90s. I'd be celebrating.
I'd be celebrating. Because of Web 1.0?
Yes, 1.0. And then 2.0 is part of it, too. 2.0 makes you more of a god. You have more autonomy in making things. So I'd always go along talking about how we have this breakthrough, that breakthrough. And then if someone started to get all carried away and become an idiot and run on down the streets, take their clothes off and start saying, I'm free, I'd remind them, oh, no, but the Android meme faked that it gave you liberation. Then I'd bring them back. They'd grind to a halt and say, what do you mean? You mean it's not a good time? No, it's not a good time. So I was caught between that. I was caught between the dialectic of we're going up or we're going down.
Right.
And then Ion showed up to sort of solve it. That was the breakthrough.
Yeah. Yeah. Okay,
so
that's
predict,
really nice.
To the degree you can see in the little blurb at the McLuhan conference at Fordham in March 1998, the description of me says that Bob travels the world, which I didn't. I just did that by phone. I didn't go get on railroads planes and airboats. I did a little traveling, but not much. I just traveled through the airwaves.
Exactly.
So I said, Bob Dobbs travels the world celebrating our victory, like his/our victory over the Android meme. Now, people didn't know what the Android meme was, but if they listened, I would tell them. And then I go into the victory.
Let's get a definition. Let's get a definition out there of the Android meme really quick, since we're talking about it.
that social mortar coming alive and taking a life of its own and having no connection to the human body anymore or to the human dimension, human scale.
Which we can see in the pattern that Billy is helping lay out where, it, like you said about the individual, excuse me, then gets swallowed by something. So when you see the individual becoming so matured with philosophy and all the self-awareness and blah, 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 well, what's gonna overtake that? It's gonna be the Android meme.
Yes, there's gonna be an environment that you think is talking to you, but you eventually have to face the fact that it doesn't respond to you when you talk back to it.
Right.
So here's what I wanted to point out.
You conquer the Android memes.
Yeah. Now here's what the words sounded positive, but you actually talked to me. I could depress the hell out of you. Scott Woods, when he interviewed me for the history of rock and roll, Neufeld told me after, he said, I can't move. I'm paralyzed. Bob gives me nowhere to go. And so
right.
I could create a real devastating negative effect, but it would be contradicted by my general sunny disposition and ebullience. As my lawyer used to say this, Bob, you know, you're telling me this terrible news, but you're quite happy about it all. So I saw in retrospect, when Ion showed up, I could look back and said, I was talking the victory, which was Ion, mm-hmm. but I didn't know what it was. I didn't know it was coming somehow. So I talked the words, but I'm like Trump in that article. Trump, he's out there running his revolution. Then Michael Wolff gets him alone back in his apartment, and Trump doesn't have any clue about his revolution. He's just this little kid. Did you read that article?
Yeah,
he doesn't know anything. He's just
sitting there. The Wall Street Journal one, yeah.
No, that was the first one. The second one is Michael Wolff, and he goes and interviews him personally. And,
oh, I haven't read that yet.
And he can't believe it. Trump, he basically has no memory of what he's just done in public. You
right.
know, saying, we've got a global movement, we're going to do this, we're going to do that, we're going to make America great, all that he does with his incomplete sentences. And then he becomes this guy sitting there, this rich kid, sitting there eating ice cream, doing Bob. That's what he does. He does
right.
Bob. He eats ice
right.
cream and acts friendly. He says he loves everybody. So when he goes on, when he goes in public and starts, you know, he had 27,000 people in his night, he starts making fun of Hillary. When you get him alone in the apartment backstage, he talks about how much he loves Hillary and Bill, and he loves everybody. The chemical body loves everybody. And so that's what you would find with me. I'd be quite devastating be devastating in the information I gave out. But then if you met me
right.
privately, I'd be this nice, happy guy, you know, who
right.
wasn't bothered
right.
by the terrible bad news. I think that's where I was split. I knew, as Ophanel, what was coming, the breakthrough, talked it up, but didn't know the details of it. Just sort of
right.
you had faith, but I didn't even have faith because I didn't reinforce it. So in the Bush era, I emphasize the devastating collapse of yourself because the machines have left you and gone on to their own orbiting. But then Ion showed up, and then I could come back and say the opposite. Oh, this is going to be good. Hey, we got solutions for you. You're a god.
Which makes sense why maybe some of your early followers had a hard time transitioning.
Yes, they couldn't
they
make the shift to the good. They liked the bad news.
Right. Or they just, you know, felt like, you know, like Dave was saying, like, I don't have anywhere to go, which makes me want to kind of swallow this concept of the dialectic. Would you say, because I'm starting to go back in a literary way and kind of learn about the dialectic and stuff. And so we've swallowed the dialectic now with the both and, correct? That's new. So would you call the both and a dialectic, or would you have a new phrase for what that is?
Well, professors who teach dialectic.
Term.
Yeah, the professors who teach dialectic make it at least a three-phase thing, and so they might say both and is a dialectic. Depends on the thinker, how much he's aware of it, because you can get into Hegel and the dialectic so much that everything is not as good as it, and it subsumes all. But that's still just conceptual. McLuhan saw the dialectic acting out in front of you in the interplay of the machinic environments.
Right.
So the year one is dialectic.
that's
just conceptual.
You can't think that. That's a good point. You can't just think dialectically. It's conceptual, but it's also acting out in front of you. I was saying that your chart is, in a way, the most accurate depiction of the dialectic, of the current dialectic. Because it's not just some sort of phrase you can say, like the both and, although that maybe is the best way we can
start
kind of cover all of it. Yeah.
From the univocal, from the univocal level, that covers it all by saying both and.
Mm-hmm.
But, you ask someone to marry you, and they go, well, yeah, both and. I'll marry you, but I won't. But then there'll be an and thing. We'll actually hang out together and see where that leads. Like, most people couldn't tolerate a both and interaction with the environment, They want more univocal precision.
It's cool to see Billy T. You told me he has some cool stuff on YouTube, so I've been watching some of that.
And, you watched him be interviewed by the young guys?
Yeah, I started, and then I watched some of his lectures at Ross.
Yes.
Because I find it interesting that he's actually taking this curriculum and employing it in a school.
Well, that's what he was hired to do by Miss Ross, to make a curriculum for her daughter and all the other rich girls out there in the East Hamptons. They didn't want to go to public school, so he made up this curriculum, and that's what these books are. That's the curriculum.
Right.
And then they bring him back like once a year, and he does a coach. He gives him a pep talk every year, in the summer, and then they make a recording, and we look at it, and then Bob mocks it. Bob tears it apart.
I want to let in our next session, maybe you can tear something apart. But he talks about.
Well,
I
would begin with his little pot belly.
Oh, come on. But what I was getting to is the etherealization of capitalism and the etherealization of marriage. He's living this out where he, doesn't live necessarily with his wife or girlfriend in like a suburban home, but they live in different parts of the world and they reconvene, blah blah blah. So the both and, obviously everyone's living out the both and without knowing it. To the degree of which they know it is varied, but but it's interesting. You can't just I'm going to discuss his book and not look at his life. In the same way.
Now that's part. We call this a gossip, celebrity gossip culture. That's because nobody can hide behind the books. Everybody can know about anybody because the interview comes out and everybody sees them. So we're all in this little global membrane, quite close to each other, and everything is known about everybody. So it isn't really a world of gossip. It's a world of people knowing everything because everything is taped and X-rayed.
Right.
So. We know more about the people, so then that makes a lot of stress on people because they can't hide all their peccadilloes and silly things they do, so they avoid being famous. You know what I mean? They just keep they keep a low profile because they can't stand the X-ray that's happening.
Right. Well, and that's where the losing of the mind comes in a helpful way, where you stop worrying about what other people think. You see the social mortar for what it is. And you just kind of move.
Well, see,
you just
now, but wait a
relax
minute.
In the membrane.
This idea of not worrying about what people think of you, that leads to decentralization, apathy, boredom, and anarchy. So I propose, and I say this is why IONS come forth, to overcome the alienation of everybody being fragmented and not caring what anybody else says, and then pretend to care for a few hours what the other person says or thinks, and engage in a little bit of matching.
Put it on.
Yeah.
That's nice. Yeah.
Like I can be privately an outrageous, anarchistic individual, sound like that, but I am here being responsible for what I say and seeing if other people can hear what I say and I listen to what you say. And that's where I had the edge over anybody on the scene because they could say, well, Bob, you're a fucking irresponsible asshole. You mute me, blah, blah, blah. But they are not showing up and making the scene available every week. They just drop in when they feel like it. They're not going to listen to any authority and they'll come and go when they want. I don't do that. I make myself a little man, so to speak, and show up to pretend to engage and share something.
Right. You get something out of that. You can't, that's an old way of thinking, the dialectic, to think that you can just be anarchistic all the time and that's what it means to exist post-Android me.
Right.
No. It means you have to manage all ways of being and learn
that's
how
right.
to poise in shifting between all the ways that you can play. And that's
the both and. That's the both.
Yeah, right.
That's the play.
And that's what I was going to say. That's what I was going to say about looking at, you know, looking beyond the book and looking at the life. Well, that's what's so cool and so smart about what you've created here with the talking environment. Because,
yes.
you know, it's not visual. It can be visual. You know, like the videos are nice that you guys do, and there's, you know, there's forums where visual is coming into play. But this is a really nice way of having the both and, acting out the both and putting
yep.
on a bunch of different options and things like that. So, I mean, we, you know.
And it wouldn't have worked without Ion. It wouldn't have worked. Nobody's going to listen to me. After a while, people figure they heard all my ideas, and that's that. But we have this endless fountain of new statements from Ion. And basically, people are here for Ion, not me. I'm good mm-hmm. as a, you know, when you do recess, you go out in the backyard of the school and you play
yeah.
with Bob a little bit. Do we wait till Ion comes back? Carol started laughing at that idea. She liked that idea.
Well, that's flipped over, too. That's the opposite as well.
Right. So back in the 70s or 80s, you might encourage people to rebel a bit because they still were naively mm-hmm. conformist. Now
mm-hmm.
everybody is lost in their virtual matrix, so I'll come forth and say, hey, why don't you try to sort of get together with other
yeah.
people, try to stop
yeah.
asserting your rebellious autonomy. Marilyn Manson doesn't make it anymore, you know, or any of those.
Right.
Who would it be? Rebel Yell, who was that guy? Billy somebody. Anyways, all these different expressions of, you know, Axl Rose of Guns N' Roses or something. You know,
yeah.
These guys are
yeah.
just going to drink and smoke and yell and scream and just disrupt
yeah.
things. That becomes too specialized. So that's why you call it quadrophenia. I'm going to do four types of personality.
Right. Or more.
Or more, yeah.
And that's where your McLuhan for this age, quote unquote McLuhan for this age, people will be saying you're the Bob of this age.
I'm the William Irwin Thompson of this age. I'm the
yeah.
Wim LaRouche. I'm the Mae Brussel,
yeah.
the Frank Zappa, the Bob Dobbs, the Dr. Beter, the Christian Murdy, who else is on that? And the Arthur Croker of this time, and the Garrett Dean. I'm all those guys. I complete them all.
Yeah, but my point was that, you know, how he says, turn off the environment. And I heard
yeah.
you talking a bit, I don't know if it was last night or whatever, but with Brian, you know, he was like talking about turning off the environment and then in private would say something different, or was talking about Burroughs and then would have the book, you know, on his table. Where,
right.
you know, this is really good to... It's just nice to comment on the forum because I feel like everyone engages in it a lot, but there's not, I just feel like there's an appreciation for this forum because it's a miniaturizing of the, okay, let's turn this off for a bit. If you're going to be this way, flip over and try this a bit. Just kind of
yeah.
get your specimen all sort of formed up at once and kind of play with your different bodies and realize that they've merged, realize that they're fragmented and all these things. But
yeah,
that's where I see you being McLuhan, you know, in a way, because you're from a wise, poised understanding of all these fractals, of all these perceptual modes. You're seeing like, hey, this is a good way to balance being both and.
Right, and we have an underlying freedom here. Not necessarily you're allowed to like be Corbin, just rant on and.
Right.
Do it without a comma and no punctuation and no clauses properly structured. You know, we're not for that. But we create an environment where you can do that if you want to act that out. You can do and
yeah.
say anything here, and you don't mind saying that you've talked to Frank Zappa anytime I want to. I used to talk to him through the Evergreens, and then you have him here through Ion. We have no limiting factors at the deepest level here. When
mm-hmm.
Ion's here, the most
mm-hmm.
amazing things are said and discussed, and mm-hmm. nobody could top the range. First of all, because most people can't take Ion. They wouldn't believe it or they wouldn't bring it into their show. You don't see Howard Stern having Ion on as a regular, right?
Right.
Or
right.
anybody. We do that yeah. as a regular thing, so that makes us totally unique. We've got the
yeah.
ultimate freedom because we allow Ion to happen here.
Yeah. Okay, I have to go. My family came. This is really great. Let's do another one because I do want to kind of get into laying out some of the charts. And I'll do more homework and stuff before, but of the Ionic phase, the post-11th grade.
Yes, yeah, yeah. That's right. That's what we didn't
okay.
do yet. Okay,
yeah.
great. Thanks a lot.
Yay. Thank you. Goodbye,
Yay.
Everyone.
Okay, bye.